Chapter 6. Mom paused in her biscuit making and frowned at me. "Oh, Darcy, honey, I wish you wouldn't go to Siloam Springs this morning. The weatherman is predicting snow flurries, and it's awfully cold. Besides, I don't see what you think you can find out. Maybe we're just stirring up a hornet's nest by trying to get some answers to the gun and marriage. Even if there was a wedding that nobody ever knew about, it was probably never recorded like it should have been. I think you'll just be making a wasted trip." "Yes," I agreed. "You may be right, but there are other things that turn up in old records. For instance, even if there was no record of the wedding, there might be a death certificate that will let us know what happened, or some kind of real estate documents that show where this Markham Caldfell came from and where he lived. After what Grant told us about the gun, we have to assume that it's connected to the marriage certificate. Besides, although I didn't tell Mom, I was still so steamed up about Eileen Simmons bursting into Grant's office and hugging him like he was her own personal teddy bear that I felt I had to do something today. Although there were no official ties between Grant and me as of yet, such as an engagement ring, there was no denying the growing attraction we had for each other, an awareness that had begun when we were in high school and never really disappeared. Even though I knew there were bound to have been other women in my high school sweetheart's life, Eileen Simmons did not seem to be the type to fit the quiet, handsome, intelligent man who had impressed everybody enough to become a highly respected law enforcement officer. Then another thought came to me. Mom and I were relying heavily on Grant because we thought we knew him well, but maybe neither of us knew him like we thought we did. After all, until I moved back home, there had been no close contact with him for quite some time. I thought I trusted Grant, but that shapely woman who seemed to know the sheriff very well indeed was a wild card. I hadn't talked to Grant since discovering Eileen Simmons perched in his office like some bird of prey. Why hadn't he called me with an explanation? It wasn't my place to pry into Grant's personal affairs, but shouldn't he want me to know about Eileen? Anyhow, it's something I feel like I've got to do. Mom closed the oven door. "Well, okay," she pronounced. "You can do your own research and I'll do mine." I thumped my coffee mug down. "Research? What on earth are you talking about?" She shrugged. "You can hunt through old newspaper files and your computers and maybe, just maybe, you'll find out something. But I can usually learn a lot by simply listening to people. I'm going over to talk to the Jenkins sisters first thing this morning." Mom was probably right. The Jenkins sisters were 95 years old, more or less, twins who had lived in the same house in Levi all their lives. They knew a lot about the past, if they could remember it. So, leaving Mom to pursue her own method of fact-finding, I put on my coat and gloves, poured a thermos of coffee, grabbed my laptop, and headed for the back door. As I backed out of the garage, a gritty spit of snow rattled against my car. Only the streak of orange in the east, showing me that the sun was up there somewhere, urged me onward. Sleet pinged against the windshield as I turned my car toward Siloam Springs. My car thermometer showed the outside temperature was 39 degrees. Since it wasn't down to freezing, I should be able to search through any records that were available and get back home before the roads became treacherous. As I drove, I considered the very curious situation we faced and tried to come up with a few plausible answers to some alarming questions. Why had no one in the family ever heard about an old gun and wedding document that revealed a mysterious wedding? And why had the gun and document surfaced now? Why was it on Granny Grace's land? Did anybody else know the items were in the well? I found it incredible that my grandmother had married a man nobody around Levi knew. Even in a small town like ours, somebody remembers past events no matter how many years have flown past, and no matter if said event had happened in a neighboring town. I hoped Mom would glean some information from the Jenkins ladies. As the miles flew past, thoughts of that marriage document twisted in my mind. They made no sense at all. If Granny Grace had really married somebody named Markham Caldfell on October 7, 1918, as the record indicated, then it was impossible that she had married shortly afterward on December 27th to George Daniels and lived with him for the rest of her life. If the first marriage had actually occurred, there barely would have been time for a divorce before the second marriage. A death might have made it possible and was the logical explanation. Maybe Caldfell died along with thousands of other victims of the flu that plagued the nation in 1918. If Markham succumbed to the flu shortly after the wedding, Granny Grace could conceivably have gone ahead with a marriage to Grandpa George. My mom said she understood that her parents planned to be married as soon as Grandpa was released from the army. They had known each other all their lives and were best friends even before they were sweethearts. That was why it was not easy to believe that she had married anybody else but Grandpa. My grandmother was not a shallow person. From all accounts, she truly loved Grandpa George. For some reason, that marriage certificate must be false. It flew in the face of all I knew about my grandparents. But what about the gun? Exactly what part had it played in a long-ago scenario? Since it was found along with the marriage record, there had to be a connection. I was suddenly blindsided by an idea that had been stewing in my mind ever since we unwrapped the sheepskin with its contents. Although the marriage record indicated the ceremony had been properly performed by the Reverend Monroe Hopkins and signed by two witnesses, there was no recording information anywhere on the marriage certificate, or at least none that bled through onto the skin. If a legal document was not properly recorded in the clerk's office of the county where the act was performed, it would not be considered legal even 100 years ago. So, were they legally married or not? We might have to consult our attorney and Mom's friend, Jackson Connor, about the situation. I headed now for the newspaper office at Siloam. My task was not going to be easy. I knew from experience that digging through moldy old newspapers in storage bins that often hadn't been opened for many years was unpleasant. However, reporters know there is a story behind every story that is published in any newspaper. Even if I couldn't find anything about the first marriage, maybe there was something in all those ancient papers that would at least let us know who Markham Caldfell really was. The Tribune occupied an old house that was originally constructed for the vice president of one of the area's first banks. Many years after the house was built, the tiny basement had been enlarged and shelves added for the thousands of file boxes that held the printed history of the town. Today, the red-headed receptionist at the front desk smiled when I came through the door. "Nasty weather, isn't it? But the weatherman says it'll clear up by afternoon." I certainly hope so, since I've got to drive back to Levi before the roads freeze over. I explained my mission to her. She shook her head thoughtfully. "You're certainly welcome to go downstairs and dig through the files, but I've got to warn you, we discovered a long time ago that the people who did the filing over the years sometimes seemed to pay no attention to date sequences. Although one box may be marked 1949, there could be back issues stuck in from a broad range of other years." Oh boy, that was just what I needed. "And one other thing, I'm sure you're aware that old newspapers are fragile and easily torn, especially if they've been damp at some time, like ours have been because we had a leak in the roof a few years back and rain ran down inside the walls to the basement." This was sounding more and more like a hopeless task, but I had to give it a shot. "I'll be careful," I assured her. She led me down unpainted stairs to two cavernous rooms that smelled moldy and damp. There was one improvement. I had been in the Tribune's morgue once before, and I recalled the large rooms being lit by four small overhead lights that made it necessary to use a portable light for most searches. Since then, someone at the newspaper had broken loose with enough money to install full-length overhead fluorescent lights that would certainly make any search easier. Settling myself at the long, scarred table, I opened my laptop, took out my notebook, and pulled my reading glasses out of my purse. First in line was a file carton marked 1910. I soon discovered there were two, sometimes three, cartons for each entire year. According to the scribbled dates, there were four cartons for each year beginning in 1918. Evidently, the war, the flu epidemic, and the failing economic situation provided more fodder for the weekly newspaper than had been available before those catastrophes struck. By 2 o'clock, my eyes burned, my stomach growled, and my back hurt. The straight-back chair I sat in probably was as old as the stories I read. Undoubtedly made by hand, it was the sort of find antique dealers went wild about. I wondered if the receptionist upstairs knew that an authentic collectible languished in the basement among the long-ago newspapers. After reading until my sight blurred, I knew more about the heartbreak of the flu epidemic than I ever wanted to know, and more about the fierce battles of World War I than seemed possible. I learned that the country had gone through a drought in 1917-1918 that had made life doubly hard for many people, as though things weren't hard enough already. Rubbing my back, I stood and stretched. A bowl of chili and some fresh air were just what I needed. After eating, I planned to head for home. Nothing had turned up anything helpful to our problem, but I had known when I came that it would be a long shot. Closing my laptop, I shrugged into my coat. Then, as though fate had planned the whole thing, my glance fell onto a tab sticking out of a carton on the upper shelf. On the box, someone had scrawled 1911, but on the tab was another faded date, 1918. On tiptoe, I stretched upward and carefully pulled out the misplaced issue. It was only 4 pages. I spread it out under the fluorescent light and searched through much of what I already knew. At the bottom of the front page, I hit pay dirt. Above a small article was a blunt headline, "Son of local citizen disappears." The newspaper was dated November 4th, 1918. This newspaper has been informed that Markham Caldfell, son of Elmer and Edna Caldfell, disappeared from his home near Levi, Oklahoma, on Tuesday of last week. His wife, Grace, reported the disappearance to local authorities on Tuesday night. Mrs. Caldfell related that her husband had gone hunting early in the morning and had never returned. A search was instituted, but to no avail. Caldfell recently returned from the army. Elmer and Edna Caldfell's extensive farm is located approximately 5 miles north of town. Markham Caldfell attended Siloam Springs High School and graduated in 1913. The elder Caldfells own Caldfell's Mercantile in downtown Siloam Springs. Chilly and fresh air forgotten. I dropped back into my chair. Although this wasn't the sort of information I'd been looking for, it was certainly far more than I knew before coming to Siloam. Markham had returned to Siloam to be married because his home and his parents were there. I made a note to check into local history if we didn't turn up anything else about the man. Then I had another revelation. I had been reviewing the back issues of the paper sequentially, year to year, and stumbled onto this 1918 issue that had been stuck in a 1911 carton. If there were other such misfilings, and based on what the receptionist told me, I was pretty sure there were, then common sense dictated that I should make a quick survey of the tops of all the cartons to see if there might be other years misfiled and sticking up where they would be noticeable. There were. In the next hour, a quick scan along the endless rows of file cartons revealed more than a dozen back issues stuck into the wrong carton, as though somebody long ago had wanted to get them out of sight. I made another find with a tab sticking out of a 1924 file that contained part of an issue from January 1918. There were only 2 yellowed, ragged pages. I spread them out carefully under the brightest part of the new fluorescent lighting. It looked as though a rat had chewed on both pages and part of the article was gone, but there was enough of the faded newsprint to tell me much of what I needed to know. Markham Caldfell had been arrested because he had attacked another man on a downtown street. Also, he had been charged with assault and theft in a prior incident when he tried to take a horse that didn't belong to him. It was impossible to get more details from the ragged front page. I was still struggling to understand what I had read when the receptionist opened the door at the top of the stairs. "I'm sorry, but it's closing time for us. I hope you found what you were looking for." 30 minutes later, with photocopies of the old news stories in my briefcase, I climbed into my Ford Escape and drove out of the parking lot and west onto Highway 412. The dark sky peppered sleet alternately with snow, but I was too engrossed in thinking about those clippings from crumbled newspapers to worry about the weather. Now, however, many more questions than answers swirled in my thoughts. Circling round and round like a whirlpool was the recurring question. According to the newspaper, Markham Caldfell was a resident of Siloam Springs, Arkansas, and served in the Army in 1918. That same year, he returned from the war, married Grace Wolfe, lived in Levi, Oklahoma, and disappeared. None of this would have mattered or been important to me except that neither Mom nor I had known of the marriage. Why had my grandmother married him when it was well known that she was engaged to George Daniels, my grandfather? And why, after the brief newspaper article, was nothing more said about Markham's sudden disappearance?